We are going to be breaking for lunch, so why don't... Okay, we'll handle several of these questions now. How do you sponsor a person with a limited education such as reading? You know, this is a real problem, and I have... there's no difference in my verbal communication with a person, even if they have a limited education. The smarter a person is, the harder it is for them to get sober in the first place. Priests, doctors, and lawyers are real sons of you-know-what to sponsor because they always know better than you. So as far as limited education is concerned, that's okay. However, if they do have a problem with reading, there are, and I'm not plugging this, but there are tapes of the big book, readings of the big book that are available. And we have, as a matter of fact, there's a fellow in our group. And teach him to read, yeah. Because we've got a guy who had like a third grade education, John Smelter, and he was in the penitentiary. God, he burned a garage down when he was 8 or something, and he started going to jail. And he went to jail off and on until he got sober. And he didn't know how to read. And he taught himself to read by reading the big book. So you can encourage that as well. There is a fellow who has dyslexia and was never treated for it. You know, that backward stuff? He uses tapes. So, you know, there's lots of different ways. How many sponsors should someone have and why? In my opinion, they should have one. And the reason for that is that I am a person who will get the easier, softer answer every time. And if I have 2 or 3 sponsors, I'm going to go to each one and interview them as to the results of my problem, and I will pick the one I like. And the one I like may not be the one I need. So I feel like I got to stick with one. You know, it worked for me. So. What if your sponsor is not doing what you hear others say you should do and what she's telling you to do? Then she's talking the talk and not walking the walk. And I don't think I need to say any more than that. What about sponsoring close friends or family? I'm concerned about maintaining objectivity or ability to bring a different perspective to a problem. It's funny because Sandy is a close friend of mine, but she wasn't a close friend of mine when I started sponsoring. So if it's a close friend from years ago, when we were drinking and so forth, I think they'd be better off with somebody else. But if you come in and sponsor somebody that you don't know from the beginning and then learn to love them and grow with them and become interdependent, then there's nothing wrong with that. Family, forget it. You know, because I got a son who's practicing for the program. He's not perfected it yet, but he's practicing. We don't know if he'll make it or not. But the point is that there is no way that his father could sponsor him. I mean, just think about it, you know. So anyway, that's all those that I have. Remember, these are just my opinions based on
it. The first question I was given here, it says, what do you mean by a principled man? I mean very simply that the actions that he takes are ones that are acceptable to the people around him. Maybe not the words that he says, but the actions that he takes, what he does, are acceptable to the people around him. I mean that he is never turns down an AA request. I mean that he does everything that he can possibly do to help somebody else. I mean that he says when you make a commitment, stick with a commitment. And I mean when he says that, that's what he does. I think that if you make a commitment to go to work, that means that you have to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning. If that's the starting time, you have to stay there and give 8 hours worth of work. And that's a commitment. And that's a principle by which we follow in order to get well and be self-supporting. I believe that the principle of work is like a prayer. And I think that that's something that you have to understand rather than for me to explain it to you. The principle of self-support just makes you feel better about yourself. Frankly, I won't sponsor anybody who doesn't work. They have to get a job. Unemployment is not acceptable to me. Unemployment compensation, unless you're injured, is not acceptable to me. I won't sponsor somebody who's on the dole. They will have to be getting a job. Now, I don't mean if somebody loses a job that they can't get assistance. And there are times when all of us need assistance, and that's understandable too. But I want them to get a job. When you stated that people that have been sober 3 years need to sponsor people, Are you saying make yourself available to sponsor?
No.
I'm saying sponsor. I'm saying sponsor. Now, the number five is a goal. But do something, for crying out loud. You know, your mother only carried you 9 months. What are you waiting for? Isn't it time that you help somebody else? And, you know, I think that the numbers of people that you sponsor really doesn't have too much difference, doesn't make too much difference. But I found with the fellows that I sponsor, if they're sponsoring five people, boy, I don't hear from them half as much. You know, they call me and say, I've got this guy and I don't know what to do. It's a very short conversation. You know, they aren't thinking about themselves. They're thinking of... How can you say it's okay to do anything as long as we don't drink when you say we should change 360 degrees? The object is to change 360 degrees. And if you ever make it, let me know. Because you're not going to. I'm not going to. And I haven't seen anybody else change. In some areas, we can change rapidly and we can change completely. But in other areas, we're not going to be able to do that because we have a will of our own. But, you know, when I say it's okay to do anything that you want as long as we don't drink, I'm talking to the fellows that I sponsor. And that doesn't give them license to do things that are wrong for them. That just lets them know if they do something wrong, I can help them if they don't drink. If they drink, you can't help them because they're lost. You know, we were not bad people who came here to get good. We're sick people who came here to get well. And so we're going to have some do some bad things. But you know, I've never seen anybody do anything bad in Alcoholics Anonymous that got them drunk. I've never seen, you know, I've seen people do a lot of damn things. And I've done a number of things myself that I'm not too proud of. But I haven't gotten drunk over them. Drinking is what will prevent us from growing. Not the pain that we get ourselves in by our own self-will. So just try to get across the idea to them that you can help them if they want help through any situation. And you can, because if you don't know the answer or the direction to give, your sponsor can give it, or some other person can give it. You can get it from them. On choosing a sponsor, you talked about your ego with someone with less sobriety. My sponsor goes out of town during the week, and he says to call another one of his pigeons. I have a problem. They all have less time with the program than I. Some, a little better quality because of having their sponsor's direction for a longer period of time. My ego does get in the way. I would rather hear it from my sponsor than to have it filtered through these other pigeons. Yakky, 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 yakky. So what? Who cares? I don't know who wrote that, but what difference does it make? What you're doing is you're getting help. You're getting, obviously, the amount of help that you need. And those other fellows have heard the same message. Maybe they've heard something that you haven't heard. And then you can get the message from them. And by the way, when you call them, isn't it true that your little petty problem just goes down and kind of disappears when you listen to their petty problems? Aren't you kind of helping them by calling them? You know, I'm out of town quite a bit, too. An awful lot, as a matter of fact. And I told everybody, there's one of the fellows that I sponsor is babysitting my house right this weekend. And I told everybody, if you got any problems, call Jim. Jim's only been sober for 5 years. And he hasn't been sober as long as some of the other fellows I sponsor, but I don't really care. You know, this weekend he's in charge. And he will give them a principled answer to help them, to guide them, and to put a Band-Aid on them until I can get back and put a bandage on them, and then let God heal them, because I know I can. This person obviously has an ego problem, and this person who wrote this is obviously very sick. It's one of Lou's pigeons, I can tell. But I think that the main thing that you have to do is to take the time that your sponsor allows you to have. There are some people who really want to take all of my time. And as far as I'm concerned, those people who want to take all of my time are going to get less time than the others who really seem to need it. I give the time on basis that I think they need it in my judgment, not in their judgment. Because I think their judgment stinks, or else they wouldn't have asked me to be their sponsor in the first place. And, well, I really believe that to be true. And I'm not gonna sit and talk to somebody on the phone for hours and hours, nor am I gonna listen to the same problem over and over and over and over again. I'll listen to the problem three times, and at the end of that period of time, I will say, okay, I've heard it three times, that's all I want to hear. This is what I suggest you do. You either do it, get another sponsor, or I don't want to hear it anymore. You can give me a progress report on how it's coming along, but take some action. Don't live in the problem, live in the solution. The solution is where we want to be, not in the problem. And if you're thinking about the problem all the time, you are not in the solution. You need to take some action. And that's all the questions I have. And I've run out of voice, or I ran out a while ago, and Peggy's tugging, and it's time to go to lunch. And save yourself. Thank you.
Thank you. How do we sponsor best? And we have touched a little bit on some of this before, but like so many things that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, practically none of my story or the things that I have learned is original, because I didn't know much of anything when I got here, and the things I knew were wrong. It was funny, because I never, you know, I did a lot of stuff when I was drinking and when I was in my alcoholism. And I really didn't know that it was wrong. It's just that everybody kept telling me it was wrong. You know, it felt pretty good to me. But they'd say, no, that's wrong. I'd say, God, I mean, I'd be really surprised that it was. But it was, you know, that's the way it was. And basically, I guess if I had to answer the question in a very simple fashion, how do I sponsor best, is that the best sponsorship that I can do is not going to be 100% right. It is just going to be 100% effort. You know, because I think the only way that you could sponsor bad is to not do anything. You know, I don't know how you are, but being a happy-ass group, I am sure that you are the subject of criticism and judgment in Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is no different than the world at large in the sense that if you are on the firing line, you are going to get shot at. And I heard a man say that I respect very much one time. He said, criticism is the unconscious praise of the ignorant for the active. Criticism is the unconscious praise of the ignorant for the active. So if you're out there being active, even if as a sponsor, I make mistakes, and I will make them. At least I'm trying. And at least I'm trying to put back in the pot. You know, sometimes I get real, I amuse myself. Do you amuse yourself sometimes? I am a full human being, and the other morning I got up wanting to fight. Do you ever get up wanting to fight? Well, I got up wanting to fight, and of course there wasn't anybody around to fight with except Dick. I mean, you can't fight with yourself very effectively. I just woke up and I said, did it snow? And he said, no, not much. And I said, well, that's too bad. And he said, why? I said, because it's not healthy. How can you answer that, you know? So I went and sat at the breakfast table and looked around to see something to fight about, you know? And I didn't know I was doing this. And I said, your squirrels are out there. They're his squirrels. He feeds the birds and things. You know, he's a St. Francis in disguise. I said, your squirrels are out there and they're mad at you because you haven't put any seeds out there. He said, it's only 7 o'clock. The squirrels aren't awake yet. I said, yes, there is. Look, there's one right now. You know, and just on and on. What I'm leading up to is this. I sponsor best when I have a sense of humor about myself. When I am able to laugh at the mistakes, learn from the mistakes, do the things that I know are the right things to do, and when I screw up, is to tell you about it and laugh about it. I laugh with you. But I'll tell you, I really, truly believe that one of the greatest gifts that God has ever given me is the ability to have to laugh at myself and to have a sense of humor. There have been days when nothing funny happened. But somehow or another, I have been able to laugh at those mistakes that I have made. And there's something more important in that than just the laughter, because it's also humility. And I'm not an humble person. I'm real arrogant. But when I laugh at myself, then I am not taking myself so damn seriously. You know, when I take myself real seriously, then I am the center of my life. And when I am the center of my life, my pigeons don't fare very well, because I'm not thinking about them, I'm thinking about me. Some sponsors are tolerant to the point of harmful indulgence. You know, that's the ones that are just, you know, do whatever. Oh, it's okay. Do what makes you happy. You know, and I just, I can't, that's, to me, that's not truthful. I mean, it's just, I was babied when I was looking, and they almost babied me to death. They almost babied me to death. And when we get sober, you know, one of the things that we have to do is to grow up. We got to be big people, you know, first time in this whole world. You know, I had a lot of trouble with reality when I was drinking. You know, that's what one of the reasons I drank. I didn't like what it was, so I drank, and it sort of changed. You know, it changed black and white TV into color. You know, it gave my life a kind of a charge, you know. There was always that fear of being bored. You know, I had this almost phobia about, God, what if I'm bored someday, you know? And, I mean, it was true, so I drink, and of course nothing is boring when you're drinking. You can see things that aren't there, hear things that aren't there. People do things they shouldn't do. You know, it's exciting, you know, and I was that. And so sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous keeps that black and white TV turning into color all the time. You know, there's just nothing like those little twerks that, you know, that you sponsor coming up and tugging on your coat and, you know, saying things to you to make you mad and press your tolerance level and so forth. There are some who are evangelists. You know, there's sponsors who are evangelists who just say, boy, if you don't do it this way, boy, it's about it, you're going to go to hell and you got to find God now. You know, and hell, I didn't even know. I was afraid to find God. I'll tell you why. I was afraid to find him because it's like he had this book. I heard a guy say this the other night, that God had a book on everybody. And they told me that I saw him before I was born, and I was going to see him on Judgment Day. That didn't sound good to me, you know, because in my book were written by God all these bad things that I ever done. And so on Judgment Day, I was supposed to meet my Maker. And I was afraid of my Maker. I didn't want to see him because he had that big book with all my bad things in it. And my mom would be there, you know, and they'd start reading this stuff, and my mom would faint, you know. My dad would be there, and my dad would say, I knew she was bad all the time, you know, and that sort of thing. And I didn't want to do that. I was afraid. You know, I was afraid. And what I hope to do in sponsoring is to gentle people into the belief that they can have a God of their understanding. And it doesn't have to be that God that was, that God with the book, you know, that kept tabs on everybody, but that he was a loving and benevolent God. So I really do not push at religion at all. I truly believe, and I say this for those of you who have been sober for a while and have yet to develop a real good relationship with the God of your understanding. I didn't believe in God for many, many years after I sobered up, because I was afraid and because he never didn't seem to do anything for me. Not my concept, anyway. And so it took me a long time. It was a good 5 years in the program before I really felt like I had any feeling for anybody else. And sponsorship has given me the feeling. You know, I don't know if you're sitting out there, you know, people say, God, I felt for her. You know, if you're sober for a few years and they say, I really felt, when they tear up, you know, boy, they get this emotional. Deep down inside, I was very shallow. I didn't care about anybody. I went through the motions. I acted as if I cared about them. I did that for 5 years. When I married old what's-his-name over here, I didn't know whether I loved him when I married him or not. You know, God was just taking care of me, I guess, because it worked. But I didn't know that. Sponsorship, the sharing of intimacies, the sharing of confidentialities, the sharing of lives, the sharing of recipes, the sharing of mundane things, how to get stains out of carpet. You know, the sharing of these just everyday things through the years has taken brick by brick by brick out of that wall that I built around that self that I am inside. I think we're alcoholics, we're just like, we're like plastic people. We go through this machine that puts layers and layers and layers of clear plastic over us. And nobody knows that we're so guarded and so full of defenses. And we drink, and that just helps. You know, it helps because people can't dent that armor. But those little teeny pigeons, boy, those little angels that keep coming into my life, they just keep pecking away at the plastic, you know, and just making little holes in my defenses and making me cry and making me feel. And that's why I drank. I didn't want to feel. And I've come to find out gradually through the years in sponsoring these people that it's okay. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to feel those things. It's okay to feel good. It's okay to feel love. What I am getting at is that to feel something for someone else places me in a vulnerable situation. And in being vulnerable, I am vulnerable to love and to pain. I grow through the pain, and I am cherished by the love, so that I must remain vulnerable to get anywhere. And so the people that I sponsor are the ones that teach me that. You know, they have removed that. They have not hurt me. Oh, they've fired me, you know, and they've gone off in tirades, and they've stomped their foot. I'm never going to call you again. I'm never, you know, that sort of thing. And that's okay, you know, because I'm not dead yet. I had one pigeon. I don't remember if it was Sandy or not. But she used to call me in this great big flap, you know, and I just can't go on. I'm so nervous. I can't go on. I don't know what to do. And I'd say, check your left arm. You know, that sponsors say dumb stuff like that sometimes. Well, what? And I said, is it still on your body? Yes. Check your right arm. Is it still on? Are your feet still on? I said, then you're not falling apart. What you got to do is put one foot in front of the other and go out and do your grocery shopping or clean your oven or bake chili or do something. You know, don't sit there and think. Get into action. Now, I don't sponsor everybody the same. You know, that would be stupid, wouldn't it? It'd be like everybody was molded, you know, that you were issued a number of weebles, you know, and when you rock weebles, they go one direction, and if you're a weeble wobbler, then you just wobble your weebles in the same way, and that's not, you can't do that, because we're not like weebles, you know? We have funny shapes. We're different shapes, and we have different psyches. We have different minds, and so we have to have flexibility. When I was drinking, I was so rigid. Were you rigid when you were drinking? I mean, I was just rigid, and I was rigid many years after I sobered up. You know, I got this thing about Slurpee. You know what a Slurpee is? It's a 7-Eleven thing, a drink, and I used to hoard them. You know, I'd go buy them in case I ran out, you know, and I'd put them in the freezer, and God help anybody who drank one of my Slurpees, you know, and I'd defrost one if one of the kids came along and slurped it up. You know, I got so upset, and I went out to my brother's wedding in California. I'd been sober about 3 years or so, and I had to have a Slurpee. I mean, I had to have a Slurpee, and I didn't even know where any 7-Elevens were in Bakersfield, you know, and so I said to my mother, I've got to go get a Slurpee. I've got to have the car. You know, it's just like alcohol, you know, I need my fix. She said, why do you have to be so rigid? You know, why can't you be flexible? So gradually, you know, I think we set up that rigidity because we're afraid. And as we become more confident of ourselves, we let go of it and we don't have to be so rigid anymore. We can go with the flow. How many times have you heard that? You cannot fight the river. You know, and it feels good. And really what that is it is a surrender to the program's Alcoholics Anonymous. It is a real decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him. And I didn't know that. And I know it now. I walk my people through the steps. You know, I go through the steps with my people. And I do it right along with them. I think that's important. You know, I think that they come to me for a reason, and I need to give them a little some kind of structure when they come to me for a reason. So I will go through the steps with them. And I have, on occasion, different people in different places. I have, I insist that after, you know, the first five steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous are discovery. Just fact, discovery. The others, including the last three, really, are recovery. So that the sixth and seventh steps are real important steps. One of the things that I do with the people that I sponsor is, after they've done a fifth, is to encourage them into the sixth and seventh step, because that's where you separate the winners and the losers. If you get stuck on fifth step and don't go on into sixth and seventh, then all you've done is discover what you are, but not what to do about it. And I think that's a sponsor's, one of her responsibilities, or his, is to help people into the sixth and seventh step. I don't have all the answers. Absolutely not. And if I don't know the answer, because I have made myself vulnerable to people, I will suggest that a person go talk to somebody else about a certain problem. If you have a legal problem, I'll send you to an attorney. If you have a medical problem, I'll send you to a doctor. You know, if you have a real problem with your marriage, I'll send you to a marriage counselor, because I'm not a marriage counselor. I can tell you what I did, and I can show you what I did. I can't make you do it, and I don't have the professional expertise that really troubled marriages have. Most of the marriages that I know in Alcoholics Anonymous are not really troubled. They're just self-willed. That's trouble enough, but it's not terminal, you know, so. Anyway, that's all I have for the first part, and Dick will take over from there.
This particular section is called Avoid Gossip. And, you know, I never thought we had any gossip in AA. I always thought it was sharing and caring. It was a caring and sharing experience. But sometimes there is gossip in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's talk about that a little bit. Almost every sponsor has had one or more pigeons that don't seem to be able to avoid tripping merrily along the primrose path and go back to drinking again, for an example. And for us to announce that someone that we're sponsoring has gone back. And, by the way, when you have the announcements tonight, the meeting, I have an announcement to make. Oh, okay. Yeah, Sam got drunk, you know, left his wife, killed his two kids, took his dog with him, though, so Sam's not all bad. You know, that's not going to help anybody. It's not going to help anybody at all. But it also doesn't help to hide the fact that someone drank from those people who have been intimate with them in AA. And by that, I mean those people who that person has been friendly with. Because they're going to want to know what in the hell happened to him. You know, what happened to Sam? Where'd he go? He disappeared. You know, what are you going to say? Well, gee, I know, but I'm not going to tell you. You know. Or, you know, the one thing that I hate is somebody will come up to me every now and then and they'll say, well, I heard that so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. Well, who told you that? Well, I'm not going to tell you who told me. You know, I think to myself, well, how do I know what you heard has any validity? You know, who are you listening to? You know, and so not disclosing the fact that a person said this, whoever it happens to be, when you're talking to someone else, is simply gossip. All you're doing is carrying forth a rumor. So if I go up and I say, Lou said you weren't doing very well, for an example.
I said, what do you mean?
I said, well, Lou said he's been sponsoring you for a while, and you're not doing very well. And he says, you seem to be doing this, that, and the other. And this would obviously be to someone I knew. I wouldn't do that to a perfect stranger, right? Lou asked, told me about it. And, if there's anything I can do to help, I'll be glad to help. And, those people that I sponsor, they share the things with me that they're having difficulty with the people that they're sponsoring, with the idea of perhaps something that I have or some experience that I've had will be able to help them. They would be able to carry on that experience. It says we share our experience, strength, and hope. And that's yours and mine. I can't possibly have experienced everything. I'm not old enough or I haven't been there. But I can share the experience that I have had. I can share the experience that some of the other people that I know have. Well, I don't have to say who it was. I don't have to disclose who it was, who did this, and how they got through with it. But to say something about someone that's cutting, to say something about someone that's going to make them a lesser person, doesn't really serve them very well, and it certainly serves AA very poorly. Usually what happens is that we'll come home from a meeting or we'll talk to some of the other people that we're with and we're saying, I was in a meeting today and Sam said so-and-so and so-and-so, so-and-so and so-and-so. And the reason why we do that is because Sam said something that doesn't sound right. It sounds odd or peculiar. It sounds like Sam is not in a very good place right now. And isn't it good that a lot of people care where we are and how we're doing, so that we can share our experience with Sam when we see Sam, or know what Sam's going through, so that we can help him? I mean, if you know that someone's having a problem staying sober, won't you pay a little more attention to them and be a little more kindly to them? Or if their mother died or whatever, wouldn't you want to know that? That's not gossip. It's simply being available to share our experience, strength, and hope. You can't share that if it's not known. But we don't want to lower Alcoholics Anonymous down to being a bunch of gutter snipes.
Now, do you know who she's sleeping with?
Who gives a damn? I mean, who really cares? What difference does it make? It only makes a difference to her or to him. It certainly doesn't make any difference to the general membership of Alcoholics Anonymous, because we really don't care. It really doesn't make any difference. So avoid the malicious gossip that's going to put somebody down. But don't hesitate to share when you think that someone can help someone else who's having a problem. And you have to share your experiences in Alcoholics Anonymous with those people that you sponsor. And you have to do this so that they'll know what to avoid. You have to share sometimes the mishaps of other people so that they'll know how to avoid those mishaps themselves. How are you going to guide them otherwise? We're not anything here but to help. And remember, if it's a helping thing, share it. If it's not a helping thing, don't share it. Thank you.
This part is called Respecting Confidential Information. And this is generally speaking when somebody comes to you with a red-hot item, one of those take-to-the-grave things, either disclosed in a fifth step or in general conversation in the idea that they can't stay sober if they don't share it with somebody. And it's really funny because the reason, I would like to say to you that I am a totally wonderful person and that I do these things because I am altruistic. And to a certain extent, my actions are altruistic, but that doesn't mean that I do it for an altruistic reason. The reason that I respect confidential information is, A, there are certain things that I don't want them to reveal, number one, and I have told them those things, and if I reveal things they're going to, and I don't want that to happen, I set an example for people, and therefore I'm not going to go be a blabbermouth, because if I am, then everybody that's just going to look at me is going to be a blabbermouth too, and I don't think that serves AA very well. But there's a basic reason for that, and that's this respecting confidential information. The devil will get me if I don't watch out. It's that simple. And I have no right to share that. And I will tell a person right up front, look, if this thing gets out, it's you that's going to put it out. and not me. Because the devil will get me, and I don't really believe in the devil, but I do believe in bad stuff. And that's good enough. And if I do that, then who am I really hurting? I'm really hurting me. Because I came into Alcoholics Anonymous to develop some integrity. I hoped that I would develop some integrity. And it is not the thing to do when somebody asks you to respect something, to go around blabbering about it. It hurts you. It makes you dishonest. It makes you lack in an integrity. You know, and I wanted to be honest when I came into AA because I was so dishonest. And I had no integrity, and I wanted to change those things. You know, we joke a lot of times because, you know, most of us who are in a position to hear fifth steps or to be active in sponsorship and so forth, you know, we've heard some stuff that is better than any of those damn soap operas. I mean, we could write books and books, couldn't we, you know, and have series. When I was a kid, we used to get into matinee for a quarter, and they had this thing called the Black Whip. There were just 129 episodes of this thing, you know, and it went on and on and on, and that's kind of the way it is when you get into AA, you know, have all these little messengers that are angels coming to you and so forth. We have no right to do anything with that information. And you know, it's a very peculiar thing because my sponsor said something one time, and you know how I'm a rebel and a coward. I get these rebellious thoughts, but I'm afraid to say anything. Fear you might knock my block off or something. So she said to me one time, she said, you know, she said somebody came to me and was talking about something they had told me in the fifth step. She said, I couldn't even remember. I mean, I totally forgot. And this little voice in my head said, oh, how could you have done that? You know, I mean, you know, surely you remember these people and what they've done and so forth. You know, it's an important thing. I wonder how come you forgot. And yet it's true. It's true. People will come to me and do a fifth step, and they will say these things, and I can't remember. It's like God erases my brain or something. And I can't remember those things. I can't even remember who it was that said those things. And maybe that's good. Maybe that's because God knows that, you know, that he doesn't want me to get judgmental. Maybe that's a way of erasing that from my brain so that I don't have that hanging up in there. So that's God's anesthesia, I believe. Again, what it basically says in this section is that we really have to bend over backward to reset confidences because we are entrusted with these confidences. And I do it not because I'm good, but because I don't want to disappoint me. Certainly I do it for you, but I do it for me. And so when you sponsor and people give you confidences, you know, don't use them as a source of power or I know something you don't know, you know. But just, you know, as it is a great secret that has been entrusted to you. And when you understand that, you'll walk away and forget what the hell it was. And that's good. Oh, God, I'm supposed to take the next one, too. The next one is called charity. It is but a short step from criticizing one who has trouble with the program to becoming indifferent to his welfare or actually refraining from helping him. I have been tempted in this direction, particularly with the more difficult cases in which they just simply cannot seem to get sober. I don't know if any of you have sponsored those people who just seem not to get the message at all, and yet they keep coming back. You know, what did I miss? What did I do this time? You know, where am I going wrong? You know, and you want what you want to say. You jerk, you took a drink. That's where you went wrong. You know, you're not going to learn anything that way. There are some AAs who, after a considerable period of dryness, acquire an attitude of what appears to be intolerance or perhaps a lack of understanding of those who have continued to have difficulties. There seems to be a tendency on the part of the self-righteous to judge the slipper and find him wanting. How an alcoholic who, by the grace of God and help of AA, has been able to return to a normal life can look with anything but charity on another alcoholic who is still drinking is a cause of wonderment. It's a cause of wonderment, but it also happens. I mean, I have to tell you that I have judged people who have done that. I have been angry with them. I have said, don't you understand what you're doing? Can't you see how this is hurting you? Don't you know that when you take a drink, it's going to be the same thing? That's because I'm a human being, and I'm not an angel or anything. You know, I'm not perfect, and therefore I get angry with them. But I pass through the anger to understanding. Now, all of us have been in stages of sobriety and stages of sponsorship. I have gone through what I like to call, and it is in this big book, to where you are a bleeding deacon. And that's what this is, folks, is a bleeding deacon. And a bleeding deacon is a guy who is just, he just bleeds all over the floor. He gets, he wants to run everything, and when he doesn't get his way, he just is mortally wounded, and he just bleeds and bleeds, and he keeps telling you he's bleeding, which is and that you're wrong, and you shouldn't be doing it that way, and he's right, and by God, just let him show you, and let him back and run the group, and he'll do a good job, and you're not doing a good job, and just on and on and on. And we have been known to have bleeding deacons, which we had one voice his opinion the other night. Give him a Band-Aid. Nobody says anything. You just walk up and give him a Band-Aid, and he knows what it is. And I truly believe that the elder statesmen and those people who've been sponsoring a long time, the elder statesmen in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, are bleeding deacons who've been bludgeoned into humility. And the people that bludgeon them are usually the trusted servants and the people that they sponsor. And if they stick around, they become elder statesmen. And that's a nice position to be in. Because then you're not a judge and you're not a critic. You just sit back because you know you've seen it all. You've seen what happens. You've been where these people are, and you can have a sense of amusement about it and know that everything's going to be all right because in essence, it's in God's hands. So we really do. It is not in my nature to be real charitable towards people, but I know it's the right action to take. And it's kind of fun. 009, I think, was taking pictures around, and I love to see those pictures, because when you look at those pictures in 2 or 3 years from now, you'll be able to see those who are still here and those who are not. And if you stay active and you stay sponsoring and you have a charitable attitude towards people and aren't filled with resentments all the time, you'll still be here. You'll still be here. And you will wonder what happened to those who are not. And it's kind of nice to have those milestones. So I don't want to, it's uncomfortable for me to judge people. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, basically the way it was this. I was either better than you or worse than you. I was never I was never a tie. And I never felt equal to you. And when I judge you, what I am doing is I am placing myself above you. And I am looking down on you. And we drunks don't like to be looked down on. It hurts our feelings. And what we do with that hurt feelings is then we turn around and judge you. And that's a mess. The 12th tradition of anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our tradition, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. And for a long time, I thought that what I was, it was great because I could say, when I saw you behaving in a bad way, I could say, that's all right. That's all right. I'm placing my principles ahead of rotten personality. And you know what that's really saying? It's saying that I have to place principles ahead of my rotten personality. It's me they're talking about, not him. So in this instance, it's saying the same thing. I got to place those principles ahead of what I think I ought to do. What I believe, my judgment. And sometimes my judgment stinks. Sometimes it's just great, just asking. But it's my personality that I have to take it. Okay, Dick?
section is dealing with knowing the prospective member. For an alcoholic to escape the penalties of excessive drinking, he must not merely stop drinking, but must remove the fundamental causes beyond the physical sensitivity to alcohol, which will keep him in constant danger of alcoholic drinking. The fundamental causes vary with the individual. These include feelings of insecurity or inadequacy, low self-esteem, guilt, marital or business troubles, unsatisfactory sex life, and other forms of psychic pain which well-adjusted persons experience and throw off, from which an alcoholic finds relief by drinking. Well, that's a very nice statement. It really is. And it sounds like something out of a textbook or something. You know, perhaps some alcoholism counselor wrote this. I don't know. But what it really boils down to is that every alcoholic, the hallmark of the alcoholic, if you will, is guilt for the things that they have done and not done. And as a result of those things that they have done and those things that they have not done, they feel less than and low self-esteem. And it's our object to be able to guide them out of that morass so that they can make amends for the things that they have done and not done. And so that they can do some things in order to feel better about themselves and to give them some action to take to make them feel a part of life again. And I can tell you, you know, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't feel like I belonged at the company where I work or living with my widowed mother. I had to go back to mommy. Nobody else would have me. All of us are mama's boys, really. You guys, you big tough guys, don't think you are, but I got news for you. You know, when push came to shove, you went back to mama as many times as you could because daddy didn't want anything to do with it. He knew better, but mama was always a soft touch. And so I went back and I lived with mama. I was 33 years old. And you know, for a man who's 33 years old to go back and live with his mommy and his maiden sister is no place to be. That ain't no place for a man to be. And I had to be there because I didn't have any choice. I couldn't be anywhere else. I didn't have the money to be anywhere else. And it was not a very pleasant way for me to live. My alcoholism is what got me there. And I didn't want to live that way. I didn't feel equal to anybody. I felt less than everybody. I went to my first AA meeting, and I remember it just as well as I can remember today. And I walked into that meeting, and there was about 90 people in that room, and it was equally divided into two groups. There were 89 in one, and I was in the other. And I felt totally alien to everybody that was in there. And I didn't, you know, I didn't want to be with them. But, you know, they acted like they wanted me to be with them. And they kept telling me dumb things like, keep coming back. I didn't have any choice. My sponsor said I had to. And they seemed to care how I was getting along. And they seemed to care for me. They cared for me when I really didn't care at all for myself. I had just as soon been dead, frankly. Or, you know, put in a deep freeze or something. I just didn't want to be anywhere. I didn't want to be with me. I didn't want to be with you. But gradually something happened to me. I found when I was with you, I felt better about me. And the reason was, when I was with you, I wasn't thinking about me. I was thinking about you. And so my self-esteem developed. Somebody said, you know, I overheard them one night saying, you know, Dick really helped good with the chairs tonight. Helped set them up and helped take them down. My sponsor made sure that I overheard him say that. And I just began to feel like I was a part of. I felt I was a part of something. For the first time in my life, I felt that I was a part of something, that I had something to give. And so very gradually, as I became, you know, as I stayed sober longer, my sponsor would let me go and pick somebody up and take them to a meeting. He trusted that I would be able to do that. And I felt like I was doing something for him. And God, I would have done anything. I really would have done anything in the world. because that man was something to me that no one else had ever been. He took me and let me walk beside him when no one else wanted me in the same room. And I didn't deserve that. And I really felt good about being able to do something for somebody at some point in my life. But, you know, this goes on to say, and it says, fundamental causes beyond the physical sensitivity to alcohol may be put in two classes, namely those related to society and those springing from the individual's perception of reality. Under the first heading are the alcoholic's economic condition, his opportunities and habits, his education, his work environment. If a man is able to earn enough money to provide for him and his family reasonable comfort and security, this unsatisfactory condition can be a fundamental cause for drinking if they can't do that. And so if his interests are of cultural advancement, but his position and family or associates are such to make his aspirations, his desires unachievable, then the frustration of that be a fundamental cause of drinking. You know, it can set him aside. It can set the person aside so that they feel like they're alone. And what we want the people to do is to feel like they're a part of. And so we give them action so that they can feel a part of. Not to take them away from, but to make them a part of. And if you feel like you're a part of something, gradually what happens is your low self-esteem develops into self-esteem. And you begin to develop some confidence. Not self-confidence, because I don't think that we can ever be self-reliant, but confidence. Confidence that AA works. And that you can seek and receive some of the power from God, if you understand. And that's the idea that we can get across. Although the sponsor can provide the proper action to remove or counteract the fundamental causes for an alcoholic's drinking, the tendency for the alcoholic to treat his problem, alcoholic problem, lightly, or as of secondary importance, well, I don't need to go to meetings. I don't need to go to all those meetings. I didn't drink every day. I only drank on weekends, so I would only go to meetings on weekends. No, but he inflicted his alcoholism on everybody around him all during the week, 7 days. You know, may not have only been drunk on Friday night, and sobered up on Sunday, but he was a mean some bitch on Monday. If he was like me, he was looking forward to the next drink on Friday night, if that's the way what his drinking pattern was. And if he felt miserable on a Monday night, go to a meeting on a Monday night. I felt miserable every day, so I went to a meeting every day. And I gradually, there are only two times to go to a meeting. And I learned this early on. My sponsor told me, he said, there's only two times to go to a meeting, when you want to and when you don't want to. And I was at that stage and I said, well, that means I have to go all the time. He says, that's right. And he says, gradually you will get to understand when it's okay not to go to a meeting. He says, but ask me first. I want to make sure that you're right. But, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's hard to tell a newcomer that you're going to have to learn to live and learn to do some things that you have never done before and to make them understand that that's what's going to change them. You know, most people think that they have a problem with alcohol. And what the problem is not a problem with alcohol. It's a problem with alcoholism. You know, when I didn't have any problem with alcohol. As a matter of fact, I can tell you right now, when I drank, I felt better than when I didn't drink. And if you feel better when you are drinking and feel terrible when you're not drinking, alcoholism is your problem. But if you feel terrible when you're drinking, and when you sober up, you feel fine and the life is great, then you don't have a problem with alcoholism. You have a problem with alcohol. And what you ought to do is stop drinking. You know, and you can feel fine all the time. But when I stopped drinking, I felt horrible. And something began to set into me, and it was just like concrete setting up. And I just got more and more rigid as the days went by, and gradually I got to the point where I hated everything and everybody around me. And the psychic pain of all of that within me told me, if you take a drink, it'll go away. And I'd take a drink, even the thought of drinking, when I knew I was going to drink. The pain would diminish some. And when I took a drink, it would go away. And I didn't think about it. And I could drink and, you know, chase some other honey down the street. My wife didn't mind much. But you can't really put business before AA. You can't put the family before AA. You can't put anything before Alcoholics Anonymous. Because ultimately, Alcoholics Anonymous is God. Ultimately, AA is God. The program itself is a God-given program. And people who came before us so that we could get well. There's no other known program in the world from which people have recovered from alcoholism like Alcoholics Anonymous. All of the other modalities in the world, including religion, psychiatry, medicine, all of those things combined since recorded history have not provided sobriety to as many people who are now as an alcoholic. All of them put together since the recorded history of mankind. Think about that. There are more active members of Alcoholics Anonymous today than all of the people who ever recovered from alcoholism before since the recorded history of mankind. Think about that. AA works. This is the message that we have to give to those who follow. And if you want it to work for you, you have to be where AA is. Now, I married a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, ostensibly, Peggy and I could sit at home at night, and we could talk about the 12 steps, and we could talk about the 12 traditions, and we could talk about the 12 concepts, and we could talk about the four absolutes, and we could talk about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob. But we'd end up talking about all those poor people who have to go to AA to stay sober. And then we would only have ourselves. And my sponsor told me that if you do that, that's not AA. What that is ass to ass. Well, he didn't talk very nice to me. And he said, AA is in church basements. It's where people go and meet. It's in clubhouses. It's not with members of your own family. It's with those other people who want to stay sober. You have to do your thing, and your wife has to do her thing. And we have allowed each other to do that. Oftentimes, we're kind of like ships passing in the dark. We take two cars to meetings. She takes her car, I take my car. And sometimes I come home late, sometimes she comes late, home late. We oftentimes say at the meeting before one or the other goes, be in bed, you know, and that's the way that is. And we spend a lot of time there, fortunately. At meetings. But there's a lot of reluctance on the part of people to continue into Alcoholics Anonymous and to stay active and to go to meetings regularly. And they think that once they've gotten rid of the alcohol problem that they're going to be okay. And it's really not true. Because, you know, anybody can detox, for crying out loud. Anybody can get away from the alcohol problem. Just don't drink. You know, people in jail don't drink. You could be locked in a basement. You wouldn't, if there's no alcohol there, you wouldn't be able to drink. So you can get away from the alcohol problem, but you can't get away from you. And that's what you have to tell the newcomer. That's what I was told. I can't get away from me. The only way I can get away from me is to be with you. So, if we can learn how to get away from the pressures that seem to demand us to take a drink before, we can only do that with a sponsor. You know, I didn't have a sponsor when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if you did or not, but I never had anybody to sponsor me when I was drinking. I've only had a sponsor since I've been in AA. And the strange thing about it is, I may have had problems since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous, but there are none so severe as the problems as I had when I was drinking. And my life is generally much, 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 thousand times better than it was when I was drinking. And, you know, I'm not one of these people who's going to say that my worst day sober is better than my best day drinking, because that's not true. You know, I've had some grim days sober. Grim. And I had some damn good days drinking. If I hadn't had those good days, I wouldn't have kept on drinking. I was hoping maybe this is the day, goddammit. You know, I deserve one more. One more good day. But I would never have come to Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place. I needed a sponsor, and I didn't know I needed one. Huh. So you have to remember, when you're sponsoring somebody, they're not going to know they need one either. But you're going to have to express how you need one and how the need fulfills your wishes, your desires to be the person that you want to be, and to become that person to others, and to be able to share and give it away. And that's the end of Section 3. Thank you.
On the second and third step. Yes, I have. I have. And it is usually either because they are having a great deal of difficulty with the second and third step, or because they request that. And if they request that, certainly I'll be glad to do it. Why did Dr. Bob Bill and Bill, well, actually, Bill didn't call people pigeons. Dr. Bob did. I don't, oh, Sis Marbeth, why did Dr. Bob, I don't know, Bill called them prospects, I think. He was a businessman, see, and Dr. Bob called them pigeons. I don't know why he did. Why did he? Nickname. Oh, yeah, that's right. He liked to give people nicknames, you know. Sandy, I used to call her Squat Butt. I nicknamed Lou Blue-Eyed Lou, as to differentiating from some other jerk that we had around named Lou at the time. Is it okay to appoint yourself or someone else? Well, is it okay to appoint yourself as a temporary sponsor? Yes, you should. If somebody doesn't have one and you're available, go up and say, I'll sponsor you. And if you don't like me, you can get somebody else in a while. But yes, absolutely. And I also encourage the people that I sponsor to sponsor people. You know, I was speaking with a lady in the bathroom, and we've all who works in the field. She said that they had an awful lot of trouble getting people to sponsor people temporarily out of treatment. And I would suggest that you get your name on that list. That's where the fresh blood is, boy. Boy, they really need it. You know, when they come out of treatment, I didn't go through treatment, but I can tell you something. When I was sober 3 months, I heard this complaint in Alcoholics Anonymous about people coming out of treatment. She said, well, they're just on a treatment high, and they come out and they know everything. Well, you figure they're in treatment about 30 days or so. When you were sober 30 days, didn't you say you knew everything too? I did. I knew it all, boy. And I'll tell you, there's an interesting thing. If you're looking to Alcoholics Anonymous as an intellectual program, you're going to be real, real disappointed, because it's not. I mean, if you're looking for some kind of real and intellectual stimulus, you're not going to find it. But you are going to find emotional and spiritual stimulus, and that's what it's all about.
Do we always need treatment to break the denial of alcoholism? Well, I always think that the greatest help that a 12-stepper has is John Barleycorn, myself. I don't think that, of course, I didn't go to treatment, so I'm no expert in what that does or doesn't do. I'm no expert in Alcoholics Anonymous either. I'm only experienced in what I know. That's the only thing I can share. But more people come to Alcoholics Anonymous without going to treatment than do going to treatment. And of those people who go through treatment, probably only about 40% of those go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's no big deal. You know, how the hell do I know? Now, how are you going to answer that question? I don't think it's an answerable question, but I know that ego deflation at depth comes by working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's all I know. I don't think that you can work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in treatment. Because usually they only take you through the first five. Okay, why should I do something, anything, that my sponsor's not doing? Example, go to 7 meetings a week, and they go to 3, all different meetings. Well, did your sponsor go to 7 meetings a week? When your sponsor came in? You know, is it your experience that you know, I don't go to 7 meetings a week now, but I'm available 7 days a week to go to meetings. And I would suggest that after you've been sober for a while, you won't have to go to 7 meetings a week either. But in order to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous, I would suggest that you throw yourself into Alcoholics Anonymous. And Alcoholics Anonymous is not presented on television on Tuesday nights. It's presented at AA meetings on Tuesday nights. Or on Saturday night, or whatever. You go to a meeting. If you're new, go to a meeting every day. But let your sponsor be the guide as to what you need and what you don't need, because you really don't know what you need. If you knew what you needed, then why do you come to Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place? I mean, just very simply, you know, it's kind of hard to get the message across, but if I knew what to do about my life, I wouldn't have come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came because I needed help about my life. So if you're new, do you need help about your life? If you're old in AA, do you need help about your life? You know, we all need help. You know, the object is to become interdependent upon each other. An interdependent action with God and your fellow man. And you can't do that by yourself. And you can't, if you knew how to do that, you don't need AA. You know, maybe you're not a real alcoholic. You may be an alcoholic, but not a real alcoholic. Maybe you have a problem with alcohol. Maybe you really just ought to stop drinking. Maybe that's all you need to do. And if that's what you need to do, fine. But if you have alcoholism like I do, what you're going to need to do is to be an AA and apply yourself to AA. Because that's the answer. That's where the answer is. It's not somewhere else. And I think that's all I have here. Hold on a second. This section is called discouragement. Any normal human being is bound to feel discouragement when he goes to bat time after time against the same pitcher and never hits anything but foul balls or strikes out. So let's recognize failure and discouragement with a view to eliminate them. In most cases, discouragement is called by a blow to our own pride in not being able to work a miracle. To combat this feeling, we should keep it in mind when one is moving inanimate objects, failure might logically be blamed on the mover. But when one is trying to guide the actions of another human being with a will of his own and a means to carry out that will, the sponsor has much less control and therefore should get less credit or less blame for success or failure. We should keep in mind that we do not act alone, but we do this with the help of a higher power, and are not entitled to the credit in case of success, nor to the blame in case of failure. We should look upon ourselves as instruments of the higher power and not as a prime mover. You know, I am not God. I cannot lay hands and heal. The only thing I can do is to share the experience that I've had. Hopefully you can pick it up. You can pick up this simple kit of spiritual tools and go on your way. I can't change you. You have to take the actions which change you. I have to take the actions which change me. Okay?
Another cause for discouragement on the part of the sponsor is that he or she may feel that no earthly good is coming from her efforts. And that's called the poor me's, you know. Oh, God, I can't sponsor. I'm the only one that's sober. They all of them leave. They get drunk. This could not be true in any case, no matter how discouraging, because the sponsor will be benefited by his own sincere efforts, perhaps to a greater extent, on a hard, unresponsive case than when success comes easily. You know, that's when we work, there are some people that we work with just like the devil, and they don't get sober. But boy, do we learn from those people. You know, when somebody comes along and it's really, we love them, but, you know, it's exception rather than the rule. When we say, well, I'll tell you what, you got to go to 7 meetings a week, you got to call me every day, you got to do this, you got to do that, and they go, yeah, you know, it's incredible, because most of them don't do that. You know, the ones that are the people that I learn from the most are the ones that give me a lot of trouble. You know, and when I become discouraged, and I have to learn too, as Dick said to begin with, that the best thing for me to do in a case like that is to understand that we are not alone in this thing. You know, we have help. We have a higher power. We have of our own understanding that's there to help. And so I pray. Now, why is it that we forget to pray? You know, we do all this stuff, all the footwork, and grind around and figure out and think and, you know, get ourselves twirled up into a basket case, you know, and everything, and we forget that we've got all that help. You know, it says in the book, lack of power, that's our dilemma. You know, that's our dilemma. And so all we got to do is tap that source of power, and one of the ways of tapping it is to say some prayer. Help! What do I do with this chick? You know, she's causing me to pull my hair out and go gray and everything. You know, what do? Show me the way. Show me the way. Yes, sir. If the sponsor has sincerely and honestly tried every technique and approach but cannot relate to the newcomer, he should suggest that he find himself another sponsor. You know, just if they can't do something, you know, if it's not working, if it's not clicking, suggest they get somebody else. Explain to him that to effect a good sponsorship, he should find somebody that he respects. Somebody he's going to say, yeah, that's right, and I'll do it. You know, because if it doesn't happen, then it isn't working. Sponsors are two-way street. If it's not helping you and it's not helping them, it isn't. It's not sponsorship. And they need to go someplace else, or you need to go someplace else. You know, if it's not a two-way street, which it should be, then it's not working.
Hey, at this point, what we're going to do is to alternate kind of back and forth, go through and tell you some do's and don'ts. Of actions that are to be taken or suggested actions by the sponsor. And the first one says, tell the newcomer that under your conception of AA, you are not only willing but anxious to do anything in your power which you think will help him, and that he should not feel indebted to you in the ordinary sense because you have offered your help in the interest of your own sobriety.
Get him medical aid if he needs it and is unable to provide it himself. Take him to the hospital, you know, a medical center around here where it's going to be free.
Provide financial aid where needed. Be careful about that. If they're brand new, you know, pay the flophouse for $2. Don't give it to him because he'll drink. But you use your good judgment. Talk to your sponsor about whether you should help someone financially until you have experience in giving somebody money and they get drunk, or giving somebody money and they never pay you back, or they never try, or whatever it happens to be.
See that he reads the big book. Lend him your copy if you cannot buy one. If you have a favorite copy, don't give it to him. Give him an extra copy because you may not get it back.
If he's in difficulty with his employer, do what you can to straighten this out. See the employer if this seems advisable after discussing it with the newcomer.
If he's unemployed, make suggestions as to how he can get employed. You know, go with him to the job service or whatever you need to do, because he needs to have the dignity of supporting himself.
Get to know his family so that you will understand the effect this very important part of his environment has on him, so that you can convey to them the action on their part which will help him most. In this respect, take pains to avoid participation in family quarrels.
Taking to the meetings the first few times. Boy, that was important for me because I was scared to go. You know, when I walked into my first meeting, I felt like there was a spotlight that came on when I walked in, and it was on me. And everywhere I went, that damn spotlight followed me around. Everybody was saying, look at that girl with the dry skin, you know. It just felt like I was right in the middle of everything. I was so self-centered, you know, and I sort of like to go with somebody and hang on them, you know.
It was just a baby spotlight, though.
Oh, just a baby spotlight.
See that he meets as many of those present as is possible and do everything you can make him feel at home in your home group.
Introduce him to others who are just starting.
Introduce him to others whose interests are similar to his.
If your group has a schedule of beginner's classes, attend them with him.
Sit with him at regular meetings.
Encourage his confidences by discussing your own experiences with him in a frank and open manner.
Keep in contact with him between meetings. Ask him to phone you. If possible, meet him during the day or evening and have lunch or dinner.
Above all, don't forget him and leave him alone. You know, that sometimes we go and we'll do it, you know, once or twice, and then we just leave them to fend for themselves. And they're still sick. They need to feel like somebody's there. Didn't you need to feel like somebody was there? You know, I did.
Set a good example, not only by your sobriety, but by refraining from petty criticism. In other words, show him that you are trying to practice these principles in all your affairs.
Alcoholics minimize their drinking when interviewed before relatives. See them privately if you can.
Get to know his drinking habits, his hobbies, his religion, business, and financial condition, and also what cooperation to expect from his family.
Explain how AA functions, how it works for us, how it can work for him.
Stress anonymity. Label alcoholism as an illness.
Encourage him.
Tell him about the spiritual aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous, particularly that it is not a religion, but his own concept is God as he understands it.
Teach him the value of 12-step living and reliance upon God's help for recovery. They've got to learn to fly.
Be worthy of the newcomer's trust and counsel him wisely.
Make sure the quality of your own sobriety is the best it can be.
Do go when they are drinking. This is when we ask for help, right? When we are sober, we're inclined to think we can handle it alone, all by ourselves. Think back.
Be flexible and use common sense.
These are some specific don'ts of sponsorship. Don't sponsor any more than the number you can give the full benefit of your sponsorship. It's better to sponsor one and give him or her the full benefit of our time than it is to sponsor many and then neglect the follow-up on the others. If you're working 10 or 12 hours a day and have a family obligations to meet, you have limitations on your time. Give what you have, give a little more, and do what you can with the time that permits.